We are up to the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Beis and Aleph. One of the things that I have learned and was driven home to me just this past week and something else that I'm teaching is that all of Shas is interconnected, which I knew already, but you can be in one place and all of a sudden you counter something in another place. So it happens to be that on Shabbos I'm learning and teaching Choshen Mishpat, and we happen to be doing Simen Yud Beis. Simen Yud Beis is the Simen in Choshen Mishpat that deals with the concept of Pshara. Pshara, contrary to popular notion, does not mean compromise. Pshara, when the two litigants agree to do pshara, is a form of adjudication which is done by judges. It doesn't have to be professional judges. They can choose who does it, who will do it, but it often will be done by the Beis Din. Pshara means the Beis Din judges the case like they would judge a regular case of din, but there are slightly different rules of the underlying law. In other words, Pshara allows the Dayanan to take into account certain factors that regular din doesn't. Certain considerations that may have some kind of moral voice or moral merit, what one side might in principle have had a reason for doing something, so the Dayanim are actually allowed to take those into account, whereas in straightforward din they're not. But Pshara doesn't mean, but they didn't work this way today, which is not Pshara, it's a nothing. But Pshara doesn't mean that the Beis Din just finds something that's suitable to the two parties. That's not what Pshara means, if you study the Siman carefully. So anyway, so we've been learning about Pshara. And one of the things, there's a Nemuka Yosef at the Beis Yosef quotes at the end of the Siman, and in Shulchan Aruch, he quotes it as a Yesh Omer. Nobody explicitly disagrees, but it's not nobody else explicitly says it. So there are those who say that Pshara, unlike Din, requires unanimity. By a Din, you vote follow a majority, Achrei Rabim Lahatos, but when it comes to Pshara, all of the Dayanim have to agree. What is the basis for this Nemuka Yosef, and it's in Mordechai as well? It was the last Gemara that we did. If you remember, we were discussing, in order for a sale to be valid, if I agree to buy your car and I make a kinyan, it's not valid until a price has been agreed upon. In other words, if I say, okay, I buy your car, fine, I'll make a kinyan, well, I'll give you a handkerchief, I'm koneh your car, and obviously I have to pay you the value, that kinyan is essentially conditional upon an agreement of price, right? We learned in the previous Mishnah that when you're measuring out the wine to the guy, when does it become the guy's wine, and you don't have to worry if he touches it and makes it yayin esach, versus when is it still your wine, and then if he hasn't acquired it yet, and then he touches it, you can't sell it to him anymore because it's yayin esach. So the Gemara spoke about madad, measuring, versus pasak damim, whether or not he set a price. And it's clear until psikas damim, until the price is set, that it does not become the guy's wine, because if you name a price that he's not willing to pay, all of a sudden, he's not going to buy it, and therefore he touched your wine, and now you can't sell it to him. So even in a case where he ultimately agrees on the price, the kinyan does not take place and does not set in and does not become binding until you have psikas damim. So we dealt with, at the end of the previous Gemara, a case in which there was a question of a transaction and psikas damim. And the question arose, let's say you didn't set the price and whatever the transaction was, but you said to a price to be agreed upon or to be determined by. So the Gemara distinguished between a case of kida amri bitlasa versus kida shaimi bitlasa. As three say, amre literally, versus three evaluated shaimi. So the Gemara understands that if you say kida shaimi bitlasa, you only need two out of three, you need a majority. But if you say kida amre bitlasa, as three would say, you need unanimity of the panel. So it's on the basis of this Gemara that the Nemuka Yosef and the Mordechai claim that one is, the Shaimei is really Din. Amre is Pshara, and Din requires a majority, but Pshara actually requires unanimity. So even though we were learning a Gemara in the middle of nowhere in Avodah Zarah, and all of a sudden I'm learning Pshara, and it turns out they cite the Gemara, it's like, oh, I know that Gemara. That makes perfect sense. Anyway, okay, so that was where we left off last time, and now we begin with the Mishnah on Daf Ayin Beis, I'm an Aleph. And the Mishnah is further speaking about the question of measuring out wine to non-Jews and concern of coming in contact with their wine and making our own wine trade. So the Mishnah says the following. Notales hamashpech. If you take a funnel, umadad lesocht slochiso shel oved kochavim. You take the funnel, you presumably put it on top of the bottle or the jug of the non-Jew, and you start pouring your wine in, so that's fine, that's not a problem. And then you take that funnel, umadad letot slochiso shel Yisrael. You now measure wine into a Jew's kli. And you didn't wash the funnel in between, and the question is, Is there a problem here? So the Mishnah says the following. Im yesh bo akeves yayin, aser. Akeves yayin means wine, Rashi says, a place where the wine can get stuck in there. In other words, the funnel has ridges, it has some type of a space where when you pour the wine in, some drops of wine might be stuck in there. So if, in fact, there's an akeves yayin, where when you pour the wine first into the vessel of the non-Jew's clay, not that one, but a clay like that, and then you take the very same funnel, which still has a little bit of wine left in it from the first pour, and you put it into on top of a Jew's clay and you pour wine, so the Mishnah says the wine is aser. It's aser to drink, it's aser bahana. Now the question, of course, is why? It's one thing if you took wine. Let me even start, let's step back for one moment here. Let's say I pour wine into a non-Jew's clay, and when I'm finished pouring, what do? I take the funnel away, I walk away, and what does the non-Jew do? He picks up his clay. Now, before he picks up his clay, is the wine in his clay yai nesach? The answer is presumably not. So you have to assume in this case that the non-Jew's clay had wine in it already that was yai nesach. Right? Notice the clay wasn't completely empty. There's a little bit of wine left in the bottom. Okay, and so now you pour your wine in, and somehow, so clearly the wine that you pour into his cup, into his jar, becomes yayin nesach, because it mixes with his yayin, which is already yayin nesach. And the rule with yayin nesach, as we've mentioned, and we're going to see in the next Mishnah on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, is that yayin nesach is osur b'kol shehu. One drop of yayin nesach into kosher wine, no matter how much wine you have, is no good. It's trace. So, when I pour the wine into the non-Jew's jar, I understand that since there was a little bit of his wine on the bottom, so that's going to become, all the wine in his jar is now also, because it mixed with his yayin esach. But why should the yayin in the funnel become yayin esach? Until it mixes with his wine, why would there be a problem? Okay, so whatever makes it through the funnel becomes yayin esach, lands in his clay, and whatever didn't, never landed in his clay, it's not mixed in. So why should the wine in this mashpech, in this funnel, why should this be considered yai nesach?
Because you're filling up the wine bottle to the point where the neck of the funnel is immersed in the topmost quantity of wine.
So either you have a good memory, or we'll name you Rabbi Chiya. So Rabbi Chiya proposes exactly that. The Gemara will cite him. Shepachasatu tzlochiso. That the tzlochis literally pushed up against the funnel. It was filled so high. So it literally, the funnel was already partially submerged in the wine, and the wine is really clearly in contact. That is one approach. We saw that Gemara actually when we began at the end of the fourth parak on the afternoon Zayin. We saw that statement quoted because that was the first time we would start to deal with processing of wine in the vat and when it becomes yayin nesach, etc. So we've seen that idea before. And there is a different way of understanding it, which is going to be the primary focus of our Gemara, an issue that we also discussed previously, which becomes a majorly, majorly important issue in halacha, as I have discovered. You walk into a restaurant. So if you have a bottle of wine in America, it's going to be, has to be obviously yayin mevushal, almost inevitably. But it's an interesting question as to what the potential problems that arise. If you didn't have yayin mevushal. Now, I don't know what they do in Eretz Yisrael, but the question one might ask is, let's say you could have it here too, but I doubt they do. Let's say you have a waiter who's Jewish, and you have a kosher restaurant. Would there, and nobody else gets to touch the bottle of wine, could there be any problems with such an arrangement in a restaurant in America, or in Israel for that matter? I don't know what their policies are, mevushal, not mevushal, because almost everybody's Jewish. Would there be potentially any problems in a restaurant with a Jewish waitstaff and kosher wine that's not mevushal? Could there be any potential problems that arise if nobody is allowed to touch the bottle but the waiter? And the answer to the question is yes, potentially. Well, it goes like this. I said to you that you gave one explanation, Lenny, as to how to explain why it's a problem. But we previously explored another possibility, which was whether nitzok is kechibur or not. Supposing I have a substance. Let me start with the original case, which was actually a debate between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And not only do we know it from the Mishnah, we also know it from the documents at Qumran, that the Qumranites, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the people, whoever wrote some of those documents, subscribed to what the Mishnah describes as the Sadducee position, the Tzduki position. And the Machlokas was the following. Supposing I have a liquid in the bottom vessel that is tame, and I start pouring wine from my bottle into that vessel. Now, when the wine mixes into the vessel, the wine in the vessel becomes tame, becomes ritually impure. That's not a question. What about the wine that's left in the bottle? So the machlokas is whether nitzok, whether something that's being poured and forms a continuous stream, is kechibur or not. So the question is, the wine is now theoretically touching the wine in my bottle. Is that called touching? Because it's not stationary. And if it were a problem, so when it comes to, we're going to see here, it's quoted from the Mishnah, it's in the Mishnah at the end of Yadayim, that when it comes to Tumah V'Tahara, we say that it's not. And it's both a stringency and a leniency, and I'll explain why when we read the Gemara. But that was the big, big debate Lagat with respect to Tumah and Tahara. And the question is, how does that play out in Yayin Nesach? Now, if you had asked me, and nobody's asking me, and my opinion happens to be wrong, even though I think it's eminently logical, if you were to ask me, it would be intuitive that it might apply Nitzo Kechibor when it comes to Tumah V'Tahara. There should be no possibility of it applying when it comes to Yayin Nesach. And I will state even after the fact, even though the halacha, it's a machlokas, but the halacha is the chumrah, I think it makes, I don't understand it at all. The reason why Nitzo could have been Chibor, could have been a join when it comes to Tumah, is because Tumah is about two things touching one another. And so I understand. So we say it doesn't count. It still doesn't count. That's the way we pass it with respect to Tumah. So I'm pouring the liquid that's Tameh into a Tahar, that's into a liquid that's Tahar. So we say, that's Tameh. So we say that, yes, they're touching through a stream, but that doesn't actually matter because the stream is in motion. It's not stationary. And therefore, we paskin that that which stays in the top bottle remains tahar, and obviously what's in the bottom, of course, stays tameh. But they're not. But I could have said, listen, yes, tumah should transmit because they are touching one another. But when it comes to yayin nesach mixing with yayin nesach is not about touching. Making yayin nesach is about a guy touching the wine. But yayin nesach mixing with yayin nesach is because the two mix together. In other words, the principle in the Mishnah and Ayin Gimel and Aleph is that Yayin Nesach Aser V'Oser B'Chol Shu. I have this big vat of wine. One drop of Yayin Nesach falls in. So we say because there is Yayin Nesach mixed into this wine, therefore it's all Yayin Nesach. But when it comes to Nitzo Kechibor, I have a simple question. Is any of the wine that is Yayin Nesach, namely the wine that's in the bottom kli to start with, or that was added to the bottom kli, does any of that bounce back into the funnel enough that by the time you're finished pouring, there's any Yayin Nesach in the funnel? So I don't understand it. As we will eventually see, it's a machlokas, so we've shown him how to paskin. But I actually don't understand at all the position that says Nitzo Kechibor, because it's not about Yayin Nesach touching Yayin Nesach, it's about Yayin Nesach getting mixed into Yayin Nesach. Okay, so I don't know the answer to that question. I'm sorry?
Quantum theory.
No, I understand, but I understand its application.
Quantum theory, there is a theoretical possibility that there were the molecules in this wine or in the other wine. Yes,
I don't find that so satisfactory. That could be true if you had two things in the wine not touching one another. Who knows what goes from one to the other?
There's a mathematical possibility.
Correct. So that's why I'm not just as clear. The halacha doesn't say. In fact, there is a gemara that we learned previously about the zara that you have two pots cooking next to one another. One's kosher, one's treif. We're not concerned about one uncovered, right? We're not concerned about one getting into the other. Now, I suppose if you see it, it's a boiling cauldron and everything's, it's stuff popping into the air like, I don't know, witch's brew or something like that. Okay, maybe we would be concerned, but that's not what's going on here. Yeah, Isaac, I'm seeing
that. What's the basis of
it? By Tumah, I understand perfectly well.
But if you're pouring something that's, it's not touching, it's being poured into the vessel.
If I were to take a freeze frame and a shot, right, I would see this wine, and there's a stream. It's all continuous wine. I understand. The reason why the Chachamim, the Prushin, the reason why we reject it is we say that when it's in motion, that's not a chibur. We're going to see in the Gemara, if you have two little pools of liquid, you know, one's Tameh, one's Tar, and a tiny, tiny stream connecting them, and it's stationary, that transmits Tumah, everybody agrees. It's only because the nitzok is in motion, and in other words, the stuff that stays in the kli was never going to get down to the bottom, and everything else that was on its way is going to get down to the bottom. That's why nitzok could have been kechibur.
You're imagining this, but what about this?
No, I understand that. No, I get that you could have blowback. If you're talking about I agree, you could have. If the concern is splattering, but when the Gemara presents Nitzo Kachibo here, it's not. If you look at even the earlier cases, it's where you're squeezing wine and it's going down into the vat, and there it's not a pouring. If there's a certain amount, the distance, it's a steady stream. It's not a torrent which is splashing up. Right? Nitzo Kachibo isn't really about splashback. Nitzo Kachibo.
It's just how close.
But it doesn't matter. No, the point is, Nitzo Kechibor could be 5 feet away. Right?
It could be 5 feet away, but it could also be half an inch away.
No, agreed. But what I'm saying is that the din of if you say Nitzo Kechibor, it applies even if it's 5 feet away. Right? In the case of the vat, where they're pressing the grapes, I don't know how many feet it is, but there's a real distance. It's not an inch and a half away. And yet, if you say Nitzo Kechibor, which Rav Huna might or might not say earlier, and he's going to be the one who says it here, it holds there as well. It's not a concern that it's too close and that there maybe it's splashback. It just seems to be that once there's a continuous stream, that's considered one body. So that's, I don't know what quite to do with it, but that's going to be the discussion in the Gemara. So coming back to our situation in the restaurant, the first time the waiter pours into the empty glass of the non-Jew, it's not a problem. Right, because when the waiter pours the glass, everything is kosher. He puts it down, the person drinks it. But now the person wants a refill, but the glass isn't totally empty. There's a little bit of wine left on the bottom. So the waiter pours in, right, and the same thing. The only way to avoid that problem, now there are two potential ways to avoid the problem. The practical way, which would be a disaster, which the Gemara is going to talk about, is to pour and stop, so that it's never actually connected. It's called katufei miktav. The other possible consideration that I'm still, what's that?
A new glass.
Lenny, that's so practical. Come on. The other possibility, which we're going to discuss, is whether or not we paskin lechumra on Nitzo Kechibor, whether that applies only to Yayin Nesech or even to Stam Yenim. So this is really an interesting. When I learned this Gemara, I thought we were going to fly through this Gemara, whatever, okay, it's what, you know, it's more things. And then Tosfos on Afayim Beis and Beis is preoccupied with the Psak Halacha here and a couple of issues because it was a big deal to them. And for us, it's not a big deal anymore. Right? Okay. So that's the question. When the Mishnah says that if there's an Akeves Yayin in the funnel, it will make the next Kli that you pour into Usser, the question is, why? What exactly is going on? Next case. Hama'ara mikli el kli. If you pour from one kli into another kli, es she'ira mimenu mutar ve she'ira l'socho asar. So this is actually very, very unclear what the Mishnah means. It says if you pour from one kli to another, the kli out of which you pour remains mutar, the stuff in that kli, and the stuff into which you pour is asar. Now, when you read the Mishnah on its own, one is tempted to say that it means a Jew is pouring wine from one kli to another. And the wine that's left in the first kli is fine. The wine that's in the second kli is not fine. Now, of course, what does that tell us then? And what was in the second kli that's not fine? I presume there was some Yayin Nesach to start with. If that's true, by the way, the simple reading of the Mishnah implies exactly the opposite. It implies that Nitzok is not Kechibor. So it's just reading the Mishnah on the surface. Now, as Rashi comments, points out here, the Gemara is going to explain another fascinating thing, which is really what set me off down the halachic hunt, which is the following. The Gemara is going to suggest, and no one explicitly in the Gemara argues, Rav Shesha says this, this means if a non-Jew takes a bottle of wine and pours it into an empty glass, it means that the bottle, the glass into which he pours that wine when it gets to the glass, is aser. That which is left in the bottle would remain mutter. And that's kind of, Wow is correct. I said this to my wife, and she said, really? I said, that's the Gemara, that's Rashi and Tosfos Paskin. And the Psak might actually hold, and this is what I'm still working on, might even hold, I think according to the Mechaber explicitly does, holds by Stam Yeno, not by Yain Esach. And if I have to do further research, so none of this, I'm not suggesting this is lahalacha, but it actually would be a tremendous, tremendous leniency for the following reason. You can't have a non-Jew pouring wine in the restaurant because what gets in the cup is usher, is once it comes out. But I'll tell you why it's incredibly important. And you have to, if in fact it's correct, taking one other possible consideration, it might be enormous leniency. Our practice normally is that if we leave a bottle of wine, if we open a bottle of wine that was not mavushal, and then we have household help who was there and we weren't home, we pour the wine out. Now, do I think that they're going in there and being menasach the yayin? The answer is obviously no. But it occurred to me, the concern that we have, what is the concern with the non-Jewish help and the wine? The concern is, number one, usually shichshuch, that they might swish their hands in it or something to kind of semi-consecrate it to as yayin esach. That's one possibility. Now, the question, and I'm not sure about, so there are places, by the way, we I don't know if we still have this, I think we had it, we forgot the combination, that places actually make these locks, combination locks that you insert in a bottle of wine, and then when you turn the thing, it actually locks in there. You need a combination to undo it, which is perfectly fine, as long as you remember the combination. If you don't remember the combination, it's not an asset, but you got a different problem. But I would raise the following question. This maybe it's not so. Is it really possible to do shichshuch in our bottles? I mean, you can't even get your finger in. I mean, you could take a chopstick or something, and reach in. The question, so I don't know, are we concerned for shichshuch in a case where you can't even put your hand into something? Now, if the answer were no, so now this issue becomes extremely material. Because what is the only concern left would be, so it might be that people say, no, as long as they can get anything in there, it's shichshuch, I don't know. But assuming, again, that they couldn't, so now the only concern would be they poured some out to drink, and in the process of pouring, they made it into stam yenam. So the truth in that case is, well, we're not concerned about what they poured out to drink, because whatever they drank is gone. The question is, what about the stuff that's left in the bottle? So if you say, and the way the Mechaber does, I'm not sure if the Rabbah does or doesn't disagree, if you say that what's left in the bottle, she'ira mimenu is mutter, and only ma she'ira letocho is aser, then the wine that's left behind in the bottle would in fact be mutter. Now, so even though we wouldn't say that, we don't say that by yayin esach, we might say that by stam yenam. And in the context we're dealing with, we're always dealing with stam yenam. None of this is real yayin esach because people in our non-Jews and the context in which we live, Christians, are not libating wine. So there's still a gzeira of stam yenam, but nonetheless, it's stam yenam, it's not yayin esach. That would be the issue. So anyway, so that's why this sugya actually has enormous practical import. Even for us. I mean, we're not wine merchants. We don't deal with it regularly. Non-Jews aren't coming in contact with our wine as it's being processed. But it actually could come up in a context, in a very, very real context. So again, I think in restaurants in this country, in restaurants that serve wine or tell you bring your own bottle, it's usually the rule is it has to be mavushal, so none of this is going to come up. But one could at least theoretically envision a scenario, and it's relevant even in one's own house. Okay. So now the Gemara says the following. Tanan Hasam, we have a Mishnah that was taught in Taros. Hanitzok v'hakatapras umashke tofeach eno chibur lo lutuma v'lo l'tahara. Now, nitzok means something is being poured. Katapras, Rashi says, means it's not being poured from a kli into another kli, but let's say you have water in the ground. And there's a river flowing down from on top of an upper body of water to a lower body of water. So that sheet of water that's flowing on the ground is called a katapras. And finally, mashke tofeach. What is mashke tofeach? One second. So, mashke tofeach means things are stationary. I have two bodies of water. And there's a very, very small amount of water that seems to be connecting them. But it's so little water, it's more like dampness. So damp that if I were to put my hands on it and rub it in, I couldn't make something else really wet with that. Could not. In order, if you would make Zeil to make something else wet, that's what the Gemara uses the term tofeach amanas lahatpiach. It's tofeach, it's moist enough that you could be matpiach something else. But mashke tofeach means it's, you know, it's so little liquid, it's almost like just condensation maybe, where you really couldn't make, you know, you feel it moist, but you couldn't make something else feel moist. Okay, so that's these three things. So this is not on a station, this is stationary. Let's say two bodies of water, and mashke tofeach joining them, or two bodies of water connected by a stream, either from one thing being poured or flowing on the ground. So the Mishnah says it's neither a chiba for tuma nor for tara. So tuma is fairly straightforward. Tuma means that if one of the bodies of water is tame, let's say the lower one, is the upper one considered tame? And in the case of mashke tofeach, where they're stationary, well, either one could be tame, one could be tahar. Does the mashke tofeach connect them and make the one that's tahar become tame? And the answer is no. That's what it means, that it's not a chibur, it's not a join for the purposes of tumah. What does it mean for the purposes of tahara? So, with respect to nitzok and katapras, it would mean that if you had, let's say, you could do this in more than one way, but let's say I have a body of water below that has 40 sa'a. It's large enough to be a mikvah. And then I have a body above, which in the pit above, it doesn't actually contain 40 sa'a, but I could fit in it, right? I scrunch up, I can fit in it. It's only got 30 sa'a. But there's a stream connecting the two. There's a nitzok, there's a katapras. And the question is, if the two bodies of water are one body, then I could go to the, you can go to the mikvah anywhere in a mikvah. Let's say I have a mikvah and I have like little like side chambers to the mikvah where I can squeeze in there, or I can put a small thing in, a needle, you know, a small kli to do tefillah on. So if they're considered chibur, then you can do tefillah in the chamber that in itself doesn't contain arbaim sa'a, 40 sa'a of water, because it's all one chamber. So the question is, my two bodies of water that are connected by the katapras or by a nitzok, is this one body of water? So even in the upper chamber, the upper pit, which has only 30 sa'a of water, can I go to the mikveh there or do tfilas kelim there? Or no, we say that they're two separate bodies of water and only in the one that has 40 sa'a, not in the one that doesn't have 40 sa'a. Now, with respect to mashke tofeach, so this I found to be somewhat interesting. Rashi seems to understand it. I don't know how explicit it is here, and Tosos disagrees, but it's not in our Tosos, but I discovered this on one of the, what's called the Hagos HaShri. It's these little Hagos that were written on the Rush, I forget which century, the 14th century or something like that, where he cites a debate between Rashi and Tosos. What does it mean to be a chibur letahara? Because the Gemara implies that if you had just a tiny amount of liquid, enough that if you touched your hand to it, you could make something else wet, it would be a chibur, right, if they're sitting on the ground. So what is the purpose of joining to these two bodies of water for? So one possibility would be in order to do tevila in the body, in the one that doesn't actually have enough water in it, right? So if they're connected with a mashke, which is tofeach amanas lahatpiach, it's enough that I can moisten something else. One body of water, I can go in the smaller chamber. So Tosus disagrees with that. Rabbi Nutam disagrees. He says that we have a shear that would actually be needed to connect two bodies of water, and it's what's known as kishvoferes hanod. It's some like, it has to be a certain tube size. I think they say if you take two fingers in it and you can turn it around, that's considered a connector. So Tosus says that actually the purposes of chibur here, in other words, to be a chibur here is for something else. It's for what's known as hashaka. What is hashaka? It means the waters are kissing one another. What does that mean? So, as a general rule, there are a couple of purposes, but I'll just explain, I think, a straightforward one here. Food and drink, when it becomes tameh, cannot be made tahar. There's no tahara for mashkin and ochlim in a mikveh. Also not for earthenware kelim. Well, not for klei cheres. That's why you have to break a klei cheres when it becomes tameh. So there's no tefillah for it. There is only one edible substance that you can actually make tahar after it becomes tamei, and that is water. But water does not become tahar by immersing in a mikvah. water becomes tahar through a process that's known as zriya. We sometimes might call it hashaka, of making the waters touch. So if you take water, let's say in a jug, with a fairly narrow handle, so the waters won't mix very much, but you submerge it into the mikveh for a moment, and then you quickly take it out. So if the waters touch, the water in the kli is now tahar. That's the principle of hashaka or zriya. So I think Rabbeinu Tam says that's what the Gemara has in mind here. In other words, when we say, as soon as you have mashke, tofeach, amanas, latiach, it's a chibur, that's not enough to make two mikvos into one in terms of the size considerations, but it's enough to be metayer one set of water from the, so if you have a mikveh that is 40 saw, and then you have water in a pit that's tameh, that's not 40 saw, if it's a mikveh can't be tameh by definition, once it has 40 saw, I think. But if you have, let's say, this tameh water, and you have a mikveh kshera, and they touch with liquid that's tofeach amanas latpiach, now the water is tahar. The zriya or the hashaka has been accomplished. Okay. So far, the Gemara has said that nitzok is not kichibur for tuma and tara purposes. But, the Gemara continues, eshboren, eshboren chibur letuma uletahara. Eshboren means still water. The term is not as often used here, it's used in a different context. We have two kinds of waters in terms of purifying people. We have what's called zochalin, and we have what's called eshboren. Zochalin means the water is flowing. Eshboren means the water has pooled and is still. The reason this is significant in halacha is that if you have water that is flowing, you cannot use it as a mikveh unless it's spring water, unless it's what we call mei ma'ayan. If you have rainwater that's flowing, then it's no good. You can't, no matter how much water you have, you cannot be tovel in it until it reaches the point that it's at a standstill. This is, by the way, the reason, I don't know if I've had this here, occasionally hear stories about mikvahs developing a crack and a leak. And when a mikvah develops a leak, it's no good. Because the mikvah is essentially rainwater, meaning it's not spring water. I know it's tap water. It's tap water which we touch to rainwater. That's it. We don't go to the mikvah in the rainwater. We have one pool that accumulates the rainwater. We have the pool which we fill with tap water, and we just pull out a little plug in between them, and we do hashaka. And that's what we're doing. It's the same concept, not for tumah v'tahara purposes, but for making it into good kosher mikvah water. So, but if you have a mikvah that develops a leak, so it's essentially, it's not spring water in the mikvah, and it's flowing out, even if it's a slow flow. And therefore, the mikveh is no good. The tefillah has to be redone. So we say that spring water, mei mayan, is metaher, even bezochalin, even when it's flowing. But mei mikveh is only metaher, be'on metaherim, when it's eshboren, when it's still. As an aside, can you do tefillah in the East River? Not that I would recommend it, but the question is, Adrian, that you look charmed by the thought.
Why couldn't you?
What's that? The question is, a river is flowing, and the question, it's a huge machlokas in the Gemara and machlokas HaRishonim, is the majority of the water in the river originally rainwater or snowmelt versus is it spring water? Spring water means any water that comes out of the ground. Obviously, we know spring water is rainwater that percolates into the aquifer, but once the aquifer turns it into meimayan, if it comes out of the ground, that's called spring water. If it goes only on the surface of the earth, either rainwater directly in or snow melt over the surface of the earth, that's called megishamim. Megishamim needs to be still. And so the question is, it's both a question in mitzias, geologically, or whatever the term you want to use, and it's also the question of how halachas determine it. I mean, it's supposed to be determined upon a physical definition. There's homachlokas in the Gemara about how to figure out when the Euphrates River, what difference, it might be different seasons of the year. Okay. Anyway, that's a mikvah topic.
River, so what's the conclusion?
I don't know. You're asking me? The better Hudson River might be a better. Is the East River a river? Or is there also a tidal estuary like the Hudson?
Tidal estuary.
Yes, I don't know, because the ocean is. You could definitely go in the ocean. That's for sure. So the real question is determining where does the ocean start. I don't think I'm willing to bet that at least until the last century, no posek ever dealt with that because no posek understood that concept necessarily. That would be my guess.
What about a lake?
If the lake has no outflow, yes. The problem in Camp Stone,
that it's not good.
If it has an outflow, it's no good. If it doesn't have an outflow, then it's fine. Unless you determine that the water feeding it is spring water, most of it's spring water, then it would be fine. So the problem, most lakes You know, if you go to Harriman State Park, almost all those lakes are dammed, and most of them have an outflow. I know the lake in Camp Stone, it can't be used as a mikveh because it has an outflow, and it's mostly rainwater and runoff and fill, you know, tap fill. It's not the mostly spring
even
water. Even b'di'evet, yes. Even b'di'evet. If you had a river, which we didn't know, so that might be machlokas, but when we know, and that's the end of the discussion. Okay, so that's where the term eshboren is usually used. Zochlin versus eshboren. Here, the Mishnah uses it eshboren versus nitzok and katapra. So you can understand why. It's the same concept. One is moving, and the other one is still. So that's eshboren. I have no idea what the etymology of eshboren is. We know what the word means. It means still water. Okay. Fine, so that's the Mishnah in Taurus. So we get two credits worth for learning Taurus today. Now, how does this relate to Stam Yenim? So, Amar Rav Huna, on the third line in the Gemara, second line, Amar Rav Huna, Nitzok v'katapros umashke tofeach, chibur le'inyan yayin nesach. And here's where the problem arises. Right, he says that nitzok, which is the one that's really relevant, I don't think anybody's pouring out rivers of wine on the ground and then drinking it when it gets to the, you know, the lower river. But yayin, which is nitzok, or mashke tofeach, or katapras, is considered chibur for the purposes of yayin esach. That is Rav Huna's position. The question, now, one note, by the way, the Gemara earlier suggested, does Rav Huna really hold that way? And the Gemara explained how maybe Rav Huna doesn't hold that way. And Tosis has already picked up on this point, because Tosis says, why is the Gemara have such a problem earlier in Dafnu and Zion, suggesting that maybe Rav Huna really does hold that Nitzok is Kechibor? He says it here explicitly. Tosis' conclusion, this should not surprise you if you picked up anything in the methodology of Tosis from our learning together for several years. Tosis says, you see from the fact that the Gemara wasn't sure there, that Rav Huna probably backed out of his position here, and didn't say Nitzok Kechibor. Not all we've shown him, we're so as persuaded. That's one of the proofs that Tosis brings. We don't pass Ganito Kechibor. Okay. Amar le Rav Nachman le Rav Huna. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, hold on. Minolacha. How do you know that? I le ma miditran ha nitzok va ha katapras umashke tofeach. Eino chibur lo lo tomav lo lo tara. And you wanted to make it, that's the Mishnah we just read, and you want to make an inference that Latuma Ulitara hu de lo have chibur, but ha le inyan yayinesech have chibur. Really? That's what you want to make an inference. The Mishnah said, Nitzok's not kechibor for the purpose of Tumatara. But for other purposes it is chibor. So then he said, Rav Nachman says that doesn't work, because Ema Seifa, ho eshborin chibor l'tuma ulatara. The Mishnah says that eshborin, when it's still, it's a chibor for Tumatara purposes. So why don't you make the diuk there? And that's ridiculous. Of course if the wine is a chibor when it comes to Nitzok, it's certainly going to be a chibur when it comes to Eshboran. So the whole point of Rav Nachman is you can't make any inference from the Mishnah because you're going to get contradictory and absurd contradictory implications. If you're going to make an inference from the first part of the Mishnah, you have to make the inference from the second part of the Mishnah, and you wind up with an absurd conclusion. See, very often what happens, we'll see a case of this later, where if you medayik from the first, you make an inference in the first part of the Mishnah, you get A, and if you medayik from the second part of the Mishnah, you get not A. In this case, it's much worse. If you make an inference from the first part of the Mishnah, you get A. If you make an inference from the second part, you get B, and A and B together are the most absurd thing in the world. It'd be the most absurd thing to say that Nitzok is a chibur by Yayin Nesach, but Eshborin is not. Right? So Rav Nachman says your whole position is ridiculous. You can't make if your claim is that you're inferring from the Mishnah, you're wrong. Okay. So Ela Meha Lekalamashmanya is you can't infer anything one way or the other from the Mishnah. It's possible that Yayin Esech, that Nitzok is Kechibor. It's possible that it's not. But you can't from the Mishnah, you don't know anything one way or the other. Okay, fine. Tanan. We taught in the Mishnah. See if you recognize where this Mishnah is from. Natales hamashpech. If you take a funnel, umada letoch tzalchiso shel oved kochavim, you measure into a non-Jew's jug, then chazar umada letoch tzalchiso shel Yisrael. This is our Mishnah we just read. Turn over the page, and yesh bo akeves yayin asura. So that's all the Mishnah said. So now the Gemara asked the question that I began with when we read the Mishnah. Haya keves hi akeves yayin, the Maika Mitzvah. Why is the akeves yayin, the wine that is stuck in the funnel, why would that be usur? That it would now make when you pour the next time, it would make whatever gets into the next Jew's glass, the Jew's glass, why would it make it aser? La benitzok? Must it not be threnitzok? Because it became aser because it was a continuous pouring from the, it touched the wine of the non-Jew. So the Gemara says, Shmami na nitzok chibur? So can we infer from this that nitzok is in fact is considered a chibur with respect to yayin nesach? So the Gemara says, Tani Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia, in the context of our Mishnah, added a comment. He says, Shepachasatu tzlochiso, your answer, Lenny. That the funnel, the wine, rose to a level where it basically was already touching it directly. And as you might say, the funnel is in, the bottom of the funnel is in there, and the wine level has risen to the point where it's not through nitzok anymore, it's actually sitting in the same pool. Now when you take out the funnel, because it's not keves yayin, that literally is yayin esach, right? That's not through nitzok. So Rav Chia said, it was shepchasato tzlochiso. Now, the truth is, the fact that Rabbi Chia, I'm supporting Tosus's position here, just point out his inferences, the fact that Rabbi Chia, well, let's read one more line. The Gemara says, okay, wait, if Rabbi Chia said that the Mishnah is a case of Pachasato Tzlochiso, so Ava lo Pachasato Tzlochiso, my, lo, if it wasn't that the funnel was submerged in the wine, it wouldn't be Usr, even though this is not Keves Yayin. So Tishot, can we not infer the opposite, the Nitzok Eino Chibor? Another way of saying this is, if Nitzok were Chibor, why would Chia have insisted upon explaining the Mishnah as a case where the funnel was submerged in the water? Was it not to avoid the question? What? And that should suggest that Nitzok is in fact not a Chibur, because if it were a Chibur, Rabbi Chia would have no need to explain the Mishnah in this way. So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says, lo, chasatu tzlochiso tishot lachota aser, Nitzok tibay. No, Rabbi Chia, you would say, was just trying to avoid making any inferences. So he said, the case of the Mishnah might be a case where the funnel was submerged. And in that case, it's clearly aser. Beyond that, we can't say. Now, the truth is, if you had asked me, the way it's presented, and this is Tosus's observation, it sounds like Rabbi Chia really holds that Nitzok is not kechibur. Because Rabbi Chia doesn't seem to be responding, he's not responding to our sugya, he's not discussing, we asked the question, Nitzok kechibur. He just says on his own, he adds a comment to the Mishnah, Shepchosatu tzlochiso. That sounds like he's adding that because he believes Nitzok is not kechibur. I mean, you're going to say Rabbi Chia didn't know, so that's why he said it. It's a strange way of doing things. It's a strange way of doing things. So the Gemara is docha. It says, no, it's saying that Rav Chia is only telling us that when the funnel submerged in the wine, it becomes aser, what's in the funnel. He's not making a comment one way or the other on the case where it wasn't submerged in the wine. Okay, so that's how the Gemara leaves this particular piece. So the Gemara says, Nitzok, Tiboy, Nitzok, you're still left with a question. Toshima, Hama'ara mikli lekli, Eshima'ara mimenu mutar. So if you're pouring from one kli or another, and the Gemara thinks it's a Jew pouring into a non-Jew's kli, and there's wine that starts out in the non-Jew's kli. So that which you pour out of is mutter, that which you pour into is aser. So the Gemara initially wants to make an inference that eshem arim menu mutter, that which you're pouring out is aser, but hod de bene bene, that which is in between, in midair, is aser. In other words, and even if somebody would run along, and while the wine is in the middle there, stick a cup in just to get a little drink. That would be ayin esach. So the Gemara says, Shmamina nitzok chibur. So the Gemara says, that doesn't make any sense. In nitzok chibur, afilu d'gave d'manan amilitzar. In other words, if you want to make an inference that nitzok is kechibur because the wine that's in midair is aser, well, guess what? If nitzok is kechibur, it's not only the wine that's midair that's aser, it's even the wine that's still in the top kli, the one you're pouring from. So why would the Mishnah say, Eshi'ira mimena, it was mutar? That can't be the case. So the Gemara says, holokasha, that wouldn't be a question. I could say, the kamikta katufe, that when the person is pouring, he's pour, stop. So there's never wine in midair that's touching the wine on the bottom, that's also touching the wine in the kli. Okay. So the Mishnah is just saying that which is in the kli is mutar, but everything else, namely the stuff in midair, and of course that which made it into the lower kli, are aser. That's what we want to infer. So the Gemara says, Mikoma kol nitzok chibur. So then you can conclude that. The Gemara says, that's ridiculous. Ulitamech, if you want to read that way, Eima Seifa, what do you do with the next words? Eshe'ira letocho is aser, the Mishnah says, right? The Mishnah says, that which you're pouring out of is mutar. That which you're pouring into is aser. So why be why infer from the first part that which you're pouring out of his mutter, but the stuff in midair is usser? Why not say from the last words eshiira the tocha hu da usser, but had the beni beni shari? In other words, the Mishnah tells you A is mutter. It tells you B, it tells you C is usser. It doesn't tell you B. Now, when I tell you A is mutter, you're going to say, ah, but B is usser. Yeah, but when I tell you C is usser, you should infer that B is mutter. So that's why the Gemara says, Ela meha, meha, leka lemashmine. This is classic, actually. In other words, this is, the Mishnah gives you A and C, but it doesn't give you the liminal case, the B. And you can infer from one part of the Mishnah one way, and from the other part of the Mishnah the exact opposite, right? That's not what happened in the previous Gemara with the Kataparas and the Nitzok. There, you learned A, for, you would infer A from the first half, you wouldn't infer not A from the second half, you would infer B from the second half, and A and B at the same time, while they're not inherently contradictory, are absurd. So here, this is a more classic kind, where it is really one case in between, and the liminal case is not addressed, and you can neither infer from the Reisha nor from the Seifa. Okay. One more little piece, and we'll stop with this for now. Toshma. Hama'ara mechavis labar. If you're emptying from a barrel into a pit, into the pit of wine, and kilua hayored, the stream that's pouring down, misfas chavis lamata is asur. So that which, and I think what you're doing here is you're probably pouring the barrel. You're not holding it above the pit. You put it, like you tilt it right by the pit, and that which is still inside the barrel is okay. That which has made it into the airspace of the pit is aser. So the question is, so what do you see? You see that nitzok is kechibur. So the Gemara, before you even get any further, says, no, tirgam rav sheshes, ba'oved kochavim hama'ara. No, the guy is pouring the wine out. And it's not because there's already yayin nesach in the pit, but rather it's the asi mikocho, that when a guy pours wine out of a barrel, out of a bottle, the wine that comes out is asur, because it came mikoach hagoy. Okay? So now the Gemara asks, but iovet kochavim hama'are, if the guy is emptying the wine, afilu gavet dechavita nami mitzar, then everything in the barrel itself that he was pouring, he lifted up and tilted, should also be asur, which is what Lenny, you assume from the start, like if the guy pours the wine in the bottle should also be asur. The Gemara says no. Koachta ovid kochavim is rabbananu. It's only an isur when we talk about if the non-Jew didn't actually touch the wine with his hand, that's only called koach, and it's only midrabbanan. Midrabbanan hu da asur. Ahu de nafak lebarai, that which has come out of the barrel or the bottle, gazru be rabbanan. Ahu de legavai, lo gazru be rabbanan. But that which is still inside, the Chacham then made Xeron, and Rashi says that that's the way we paskin, because nobody argues on Rav Sheshes. So at least according to Rashi and Tosos, and I think the Rush, if a non-Jew pours, even if he's intending it as, well, I guess it doesn't matter in this case, if he pours wine out of something, the wine that gets poured out is Aser, the wine that remains behind is Mutter. As I mentioned earlier, there may be other Rishonim who disagree with that. The reason you would disagree probably is because Nitzo Kechibor. Because once the wine outside becomes Aser, it now comes back and Aser's the wine inside. We have to explain what it did with Rav Sheshes, because Rashi is correct. Nobody explicitly argues. But we will, God willing, pick up with that next week. Okay.